Hi, my name is Nada Ahmed, and I am your host for the Braving Innovation Podcast. I am passionate about helping teams and leaders reach their strategic ambitions through innovation. I believe every company and team can bring new products and services to market and achieve immense success in creating sustainable and profitable business models. All you need is an inclusive innovation mindset, have access to proven tools and strategies, and a robust network of mentors to guide you. Through this podcast, I bring to you inspiring stories, tips, and strategies from leaders all around the world so that you can excel on your journey as an entrepreneur, innovation leader, and investor. Welcome to Braving Innovation.
Today, I'm honored to have with me Jennifer Lee Koss. She is the founder of retail agency Berka, which she founded in 2012, so about 10 years ago now. And she's an active angel investor and a founding partner of Spring Bank Collective, which is an investment firm that she will talk more about. It's a coalition of value-aligned investors, and we'll get into the detail of that together with her. So I'm really, really excited to be here with you, Jen. And let me just say, the first time I actually met Jennifer, it was a few years ago, and it probably wasn't too long after you had landed in Norway. And we were at the Centeio Exchange where I heard, and I was on the stage with her husband talking about the great work that you're doing through your nonprofit, Right to Play, where you have a mission of empowering children through education, through play, rising them above adversity, and really impacting millions of lives all around the world. And just wanted to put that in there, just really, really inspiring and very commendable. To see you both making a difference in the lives of so many kids.
Oh my gosh. I take no credit for that, by the way. That's fully my husband. And I'm an avid supporter, of course, but really he's built in a formidable movement. So yes.
Yeah. No. Yeah. And today the topic I chose for this, this live was around gender lens investing, and we'll get into the details of that. But first I thought, maybe we would like to get to know you a little bit. So I thought, how about talk to us about, you know, Jennifer as a little girl, what were some of the things that you loved to do, like in school, for example, and then maybe talk through how you use some of those in what you do today and, you know, the great career that you've built for you.
Oh my goodness. Well, first of all, thank you. I'm so honored to be the inaugural guest of your show. I feel like, oh my goodness, what did I do to deserve this? And so thank you so much for having me. And I'm so honored to share any part of my journey and my story, which is very kind of has taken a lot of twists and turns. I think I actually just read, I think it was yesterday, saying there's a stat that says like Gen Z, you know, their whole new thing is that they just like go straight to where they want to be, as opposed to our generations where we like literally meandered in different ways to get to where we want. So I do have a long winding journey story. But yes, I guess for me, what really defined, the way that I was raised, and I'm American, Korean American, my parents are both from Korea. And, I was a cellist for most of my life. So from when I was about 10 until I was 26, I really focused on my music and playing my music. And it was definitely a big part of who I was and what I did and what sort of drove me. I did go to a normal school like along the way, but I also on the side was part of something called the Juilliard School Pre-College Program, which was meant for kids basically when you're about 10 until you graduate high school to have an extra day of school. So I would go on Saturdays, every Saturday. I guess where most kids were having normal Saturdays, I was doing another Saturday school day where it was just all focused around music. And I was around young kids and individuals who were really focused on their instrument and their love for music, which was a privilege. But I spent many summers going to music festivals, I guess band camp, and meeting people from all over the world and playing with them. And my music took me to different places in the world as well at a young age. So everywhere from Japan to France and Germany and all over the United States. I mean, it was really, it was just an amazing experience, I guess, for me to have that as a young age. And then I decided at a certain point to, I guess, study post graduating high school. I went to a music conservatory in Germany for a year and then ended up going to Harvard because I had applied there early, but had taken a year off to go study in Germany. And then I decided, okay, I'm going to go and I'm going to have a normal college experience. I don't know what about Harvard is normal, but I certainly had college experience, and I really was a sporty person. So I played lacrosse, which is maybe a sport known to some, but not to many. And I played on that team for 4 years while I also did music, and I studied privately on the side with some of the New England Conservatory. And so I kind of kept all these facets of my life going, I guess, as I was going through that in university. I think in college was where I sort of started to flex my entrepreneurial bug. And if I look back now, I realize it was probably a thread that had followed me a whole long way, but I had really wanted to start a conductorless orchestra, which didn't exist on the campus of Harvard at the time. And I thought, why not? I mean, it's so fun to play 13 people on stage, strings, but with no conductor. And so I just kind of started to cobble together people in my network and brought it together. And we started something which to this day, 25 plus years later, still exists on campus and is one of, you know, a sought after musical group on campus called the Brattle Street Chamber Players. So I started that in 1998. And when I graduated university, I basically came to a weird fork in the road because I had spent 2 summers investment banking. Why not? And I loved that experience, but I also felt like my musical experience and journey wasn't over yet. And I had gotten a fellowship through the Harvard Music Faculty to go to England to study at Oxford. And I thought, well, I guess I should do it. I mean, why not? And I ended up going there for 2 years and simultaneously studying with a cellist at the Royal Academy of Music. And I still kept that musical thing going, but I just, it was eye-opening. It was such a great experience. I met so many incredible people from all over the world yet again. And ended up at some point figuring out that although I loved music and I loved playing my cello, there had to be more. And for me, I was a very interdisciplinary person. I am an interdisciplinary person. I like to bring in all the different parts of my life together in different ways. And I felt like the music wasn't enough for some reason. And I felt that most musicians that I knew, rightly so. I mean, it was like tap water. You either had it on or you had it off. And I felt like I wanted to have it on, but then I wanted to like run around and splash water in other places. So I decided to become a management consultant because I thought, hey, if I'm going to learn more about business and all the different industries out there, then I should probably go somewhere where I have that exposure. And so I ended up going to a firm based in London. Its head office was in Boston, and I started doing a lot of private equity due diligence. So I was getting into the weeds on companies that were predominantly consumer retail companies. And I was loving that experience. And it ended up taking me to business school. So back to Harvard at Harvard Business School, and then taking me to Toronto afterwards because my then fiance, but now husband, was living there. And I ended up working for a pretty large pension plan on their direct investing private equity team, investing in consumer, and then started investing in funds. And then I left to start Bricka because I guess I had this entrepreneurial desire to do something. And so I started that business nearly 10 years ago. And it's, exciting journey.
very exciting. So 2 questions. Do you still play the cello at all?
Oh my goodness. I am dreaming about playing my cello. So when I decided to stop playing, I actually went cold turkey. Like I could not play it for fun. It wasn't fun. It would like sounded horrible and I couldn't even play. So I kind of put it in a closet and I put it away. But about 4 years ago, I had heard about something when we were living in Canada about this thing called the Musical Instrument Bank. And I realized that there was a sort of hub in Canada that would take your instrument if you had a nice instrument. And I did. I had a beautiful old Italian cello that was sitting in a closet for like you know, 10 plus years, sad. And they take your instrument and they keep it and they refurbish it, but they also allow any aspiring musicians to audition for your instrument. And then they are sort of loaned that instrument. And so I was so fascinated by this. I was like, wow, I really should do that. And I started looking down the list of all the people who had had the experience of having an instrument. And I realized, oh my goodness, there is a woman on this list who I grew up with, who I did not even know had been loaned an instrument her entire time. And she is actually a cellist today and she's, you know, amazing. And I thought, if she did that, if she had that opportunity, then I'm going to give my instrument. So I basically gave it to the bank.
Yeah.
And fast forward, I got this email out of the blue, post the auditions of people trying out for the instruments, from the woman that I had seen on the website. And she wrote me an email that just said, I was a judge at this audition and I recognized your instrument. And so thank you so much for, you know, giving this instrument to another person who is a very nice, amazing cellist who's in his 20s, who studies at the Curtis Institute in Philadelphia. He's so talented. And I couldn't believe it. And I wrote her back and I said, well, the reason why I even gave my instrument was because of you. So
full circle. Wow, that's so fascinating, yeah. Right?
Yeah. So I don't play. My instrument is gone. It actually makes me sad a little bit because
I would. But you put it to good use. Yeah.
It is to good use.
Yeah. So and so my second question was around, you know, I have just started my entrepreneurial journey and left my like really long career in corporate that I really enjoyed. And I'm just curious, what was like that moment for you when you know, you were in management consulting where you were like, okay, I have to do this. Like I have to take that leap because so many of us stay in the safety and the security of that corporate job, that monthly payment coming to us. And it's not so easy to just say, okay, I'm going to now start my own company.
Oh my gosh. It's so true. It's so true. It's so hard. That leap is like the hardest leap you can possibly make. And I think sometimes that people who take the leap are born with it. That's like a little bit how I feel because I know so many people who talk about it and continue to talk about it. I'm going to do it. I'm going to try this. I'm going to do it. And my response is like, all right, let's do it. Just go do it. You know, take that tiny little step and just do it. And you know what? They'll never do it. So it's okay. Like that's in their DNA that they cannot. You don't have that propensity to take that leap, and that's okay. I think for me, as I think back, as I said, like I realized as I went along the way that I always had this entrepreneurial bug, but I also was sort of exposed to it a bit because my mother had started her own. She started two things, but she had started her own foundation, sort of giving young Korean American artists and musicians a platform. And so I thought, and I watched her on that whole journey. And then she also had sort of co-founded a conductorless orchestra in New York. And so I sort of was exposed to it, I think. And I saw it. And what I saw was that you could do it. It was really hard. And it was like really not the easiest thing, but you could do it. And I think that I kind of had that in my mind, like, okay, this is definitely going to be a journey, but I think that I can do it.
Yeah. And I think so for those of you who have that kind of, it just seems like the normal thing to do, right? Because especially if you have it in your family, oh, you've seen someone do it. It's fine. Whereas for people who maybe have not seen it, it can seem like a big leap.
Oh gosh. I mean, been there and done it. Like, yes, it is a huge decision, but it also, by the way, is not a huge decision because most people who are enterprising and excited and want to start something and have good ideas, listen, you will always have a job. You can try the thing. And if it doesn't work out, you can always, you're hireable. Like, just think about it. Your backfall is that someone's going to hire you and you're going to have a great job somewhere. So I think that, you know, that idea of like having the confidence to take that leap is really, it's first of all, it can be a tiny little step. It doesn't have to be big. And you can start by just making little steps to get to the big thing. And it doesn't have to feel like I need to do it all right now and sort of figure it out, because I think you figure it out as you go on the journey.
Yeah, exactly. And it's for me, it's really about, you know, you use the word confidence. It's like confidence in yourself, right? Like you said, if it doesn't work out, you can go back and get another job. And what's the big deal?
Totally. Oh my goodness.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay, great. So I was thinking maybe we could dive into a little bit about the work that you're doing with Springbank Collective. And yes. tell us about that. And maybe also for many of our listeners, talk to us about what is a gender lens investing? What does that mean?
Yeah. Oh my goodness. Okay. Where do I start? So my journey to Springbank, I really think it started for me like 10 years ago when I started my company, because part of what I was doing was working with thousands of young budding brands, like emerging brands, and 99.9% of those companies and brands and businesses were women led or women owned. And so I started to see like, okay, this is like, it's a struggle. You know, if you're going to be a businesswoman, and by the way, I lived it in corporate as well. Many, many times I was the only woman in the room and mistaken for the secretary or can you go get me a glass of water? You know, it's crazy many, many times. So I think that all those things have kind of built up on me. And I had also been actively angel investing, which I can come back to, but I had also been sort of actively angel investing in women entrepreneurs. And I felt like as I came together with my two partners, who I've also known for about 25 years, that there was a real need to think about how we could change the gender equality equation that went beyond what we were seeing a lot in the market, which is like mentorship programs, and maybe just investing in female founders, which is a massive, massive problem, really big problem actually in Norway, sadly, and in the Nordics, which is ironic. But that wasn't the problem we're trying to solve. What we were trying to solve is the infrastructure. Why aren't women and working families or working women, why aren't they succeeding? Well, they don't have this amazing infrastructure to support them. And I look at this from a very North American lens. So we don't have paid leave in the US. We don't have paternity leave barely. Women are having babies and going back to work 6 weeks later. Like there's structural things that don't exist that help. You know, here in Norway and in the Nordics, you see something very different. So you have an infrastructure. There's a huge priority on family and all women work. So I think there's, you know, really this difference. But we said, if we can invest in three categories, so care, things that touch career, things that touch child care and elderly care and caregiving, which by the way, falls predominantly on women, and career, so things that are taking bias out of the system, allowing women to stay in their seats longer so they can get more senior, or you know, really focus on the future of work and how people are working today. And then the last being household consumer. So what are the efficiencies we can find in the home? How can we bring, as we say, like the product revolution, like back into the home? And so that's like tools and services and products that are meant for working moms or working families or things that we're spending on for your kids, for example. It's a pretty big market. And then for us, that infrastructure, if we can find companies, doesn't matter if you're a male or female founder, doesn't matter. We think that you can start to build something that supports all women and working families. And that's how we think about gender. And gender lens investing in our eyes is, well, first of all, it's always about financial return. So that's like, there's no concessionary returns here. We're talking about like real financial returns. And the second is, does it give benefit to women and girls? And that's sort of how we think about our lens. But there's lots of different ways to obviously look at gender lens investing.
Yeah. No, well, that's super inspiring. And I mean, I love the part about care, and it's not only just childcare, but thinking about the care for elderly, because often we don't think about that. And that if that a lot of women have to take leaves from job because they have to take care of an elderly parent.
Yeah.
And also I like the part about sort of, yeah, what we're doing at home to make it easier for parents to go to work, like dual parents to go to work. So not only, yeah, you know, things like we have in the Nordics, like daycare, et cetera, but, yeah. But you know, other things you could do at home so that you can make lives of families easier, yeah, while they go to work, right? And there's, yes, such, I mean, I, as a parent, I see so much opportunity there.
So yeah. Could you talk I mean,
Yeah.
Go ahead. Sorry.
No, I was just going to say, yeah, I'd love some examples of maybe some of the companies that are working in this space.
Yes, totally. So there's a couple investments that we've made recently. One actually is a company called Little Otter. It is, it's actually a mother-daughter founding team. The mother is a an expert in child psychiatry, and she is really like a renowned expert. And her daughter is sort of like a tech person. So she like worked at Palantir. She has this background in technology. And so she's basically, the two of them combined is like an amazing combination. They are providing telemedicine, telehealth to families and young children. And for us, like that coming out of COVID, for example, particularly, was really important because we were seeing not only is this something that is a pervasive problem in general, but worldwide, this is a problem that's only getting worse. And so we really wanted to find that platform that allowed for those services to be available to all families, all children. And you didn't have to be obviously face-to-face in real life. Yes. I'm trying to read some questions here too.
Yeah, so we have Tobias asking us, how can the startup world be more inclusive of the groups you mentioned? The hustle culture is still strong as far as I see, at least in Germany. So Tobias joining us from Germany here.
I see. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, my goodness. Yes. I'm literally thinking, you know, it's amazing because, and then you talk about the startup world and the hustle culture, and you think about, you know, a lot of the startups that we look at, some of them, but not all of them are being solved by like 20-year-olds in hoodies who can like sleep under their desks all night and like work all day. Like many of the solutions that we are finding are actually started by parents. So my moms, maybe like second, third time founders who've already done something and want to really sort of solve the problem that they know in their space. So I think in many ways, I think that mentality has to change. Like, I think people are seeing it. Founders are getting burnout. Like it's just not reasonable and it's not sustainable. So I think like you kind of have to take into account that life comes first. And I think that like us as investors, yes, you want your founders to hustle. There's no doubt. And you want them to be successful, but I think not to the detriment of your physical health, your mental health, your emotional health, like all of these things. So yeah, I mean, I think you can still hustle hard, but hustle better.
Yeah. And I was going to say, because you mentioned earlier on about like the difference between this Gen Z and perhaps even, you know, the millennials who, you know, like me as a millennial came to the workforce like around 2008, 2009, where there was a big market crash and we were just lucky to have a job to yeah. start with. And so we were like willing to do whatever we needed to do. Whereas the Gen Zers are now coming to work in a totally different environment where, you know, you can just go on YouTube and Instagram and make a lot of money. And they're also coming to work at the time of the pandemic, which has really upended everything about the way that we work, right? And, totally. And they're demanding more flexibility, more freedom.
Yeah.
So I do think that's going to have a huge impact on our work culture going forward.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think it's called the Great Resignation for a reason. You know, people are falling out of the workforce in droves. And by the way, many of them women. But I think that, yeah, people are really thinking through their being as like a whole. You know, it's my professional career doesn't need to define me in every single way. Like I still also am a person that has interests and life, and like I have four kids. I mean, it's like, you know, like we have to bring in all the elements of what we do. And by the way, because of COVID and because we are all digitals all the time, like sometimes it's like we're working probably harder, more than we've ever worked before. So I think there's a lot of dynamics at play, but I think that like this idea of just self-awareness, wellness, like taking care of yourself, life comes first. Like it's a motto for me all the time. It's like, you know what, like we really got to focus on some of the other things and then, you know, get back to kind of what you're doing. Sorry, I keep on reading all these questions because I'm like so fascinated where people are. Where do you find the companies? There are more companies. Sorry, I only talked about one. And yes, they are all startups. So we invest in seed to Series A companies. And then many of them are on our website. So it's springbankcollective.com. I think we've made 24 investments. So we've been very active. And maybe some examples of some other companies that we've invested in recently. One is called Careful. They are really what we call financial caregiving. So it's really targeted at, for example, like your aging parents. They're going to maybe go through someone trying to misle them or go through, you know, fraud or online fraud, or maybe they need help paying their bills. Or so we're made, it's another tool that allows families and caregivers to actively financially manage those things for their aging parents or aging adults.
Yeah. And then, yeah, you know, because Vita was asking, like, where do you find these startups and how do you ensure that you get that diversity, not only, you know, in terms of like gender diversity, but they're not like the same people who always get access to capital because they have a really good network or they come from really good schools.
Yes.
How do you make sure that you provide access to people who usually wouldn't?
Yes, totally. It is absolutely at the top of our minds. I think that we are in a space or in spaces where that can be overlooked, that are seriously underestimated. And then when you really look at it, you're like, we've done, you know, the market sizing. It's like $670 billion worth of opportunity when you look at these spaces. I think that we look at it in different ways. We source from our networks, obviously, and the three of us come from very different backgrounds. So I think that kind of they're interrelated, but they're different. So I think that that's one. We also do a lot of like ground bottoms up kind of sourcing, meaning we tackle problems or areas that we really care about or think about. And then we look for all the companies potentially that might be interesting to us in the space. And so an example might be like menopause. We really think that's a really interesting like area. All women will go through it. Clearly a large market opportunity. So what companies are sort of hitting that space and what are they doing about it? And who's disrupting and who's creating innovation in it? So that's another example. But I think it's a mixture of both top down and bottoms up. And we're just out there and we're talking and we're meeting other investors who are looking in the space as well.
Mm-hmm. No, and that's good. I like the sort of bottom up approach in a way that it's not only people coming to you asking for investment, but you're actually going out and seeking. And I love the topic of menopause and something that I kind of became more aware of recently, how a lot of women actually leave their careers at the time that they get menopause.
Yes.
Because our work environment is not made to account for how women bodies are just work differently than men.
Yeah. And that's why it's interesting to think about how could it be a corporate benefit? You know, can companies now really double down on their benefits and provide women who may be perimenopausal, like, you know, maybe they're not going through it yet, but they might be, but give them some of the tools, you know, to actively manage that for themselves so that they do stay on the job and they do feel they can stay in the workforce longer, better.
Yeah. And I think it's kind of part of how we just ignore the things that make women, women. And we just like, yeah, okay, we'll include you, but you know, just act like everybody else, behave like everybody else, which is like mostly. Well,
yeah. I think you're touching on something really, really critical, by the way, which is just like around the ecosystem in general, right? Which is, you know, if you don't have, first of all, and you can even go back in the chain, if you don't have enough sort of LPs that are funding, for example, female managers who are then funding female founders or female-led companies or companies that are in the female space, it'll be a broken cycle. You'll never get there. So it's like you need to build up all of those elements in the ecosystem to really make it work. And for the companies that are tackling very large market opportunities to be funded. And so I think we're somewhat just at the beginning of that, to be honest, right?
Hmm. Yeah, and that's such an important point that it's just like there's this whole value chain and you have to address different aspects of that value chain. And like you said, it's, you know, I love it that you were addressing the infrastructure, not just saying, okay, we're going to invest on women or women founders. It's really about addressing the infrastructure that creates solutions that will help more women get into the workforce and have that financial freedom that they need and that they deserve.
Totally.
Yeah. No, thank you. Okay. Yeah. Rita saying, yeah, menopause is a topic that needs more awareness, being on top of it, like the emotional roller coaster.
That's so true. Were, yes.
Yeah.
Impacts how you show
that's
up.
When we were 14. Yeah. That is true. Right. And, Yes, so many things that we need to take into account. But our time has come to an end really quickly here.
I know. I'm like, we could have talked about so much more.
Yeah, no, this has been great. Yeah, I was thinking we could end with maybe any sort of parting words for you have for entrepreneurs, particularly on, you know, in terms of getting access to investment, but also for people on how could they address this gender gap. If they are, as an entrepreneur and as in a corporate, just any piece of advice that you would like to give us on that.
Oh my gosh. I don't know. I don't know even know if I should be, I don't know. What are my core pieces of advice? I mean, I think the biggest one is just around like knowing your value, meaning like everybody has something to offer. And that means that you should be offering that. Like my little
chocolate.
One.
chocolate.
Sorry. Chocolate? Oh, go eat it. Go eat it.
Yeah.
He's got chocolate. So it's offering up your value. Honestly, like now, don't wait until you feel like I'm a really valuable person now. And now I'm going to like give back and I'm going to like, you always have something to offer. And I think that like, by sort of that exchange of like being open and saying, I can help you, or can I do this? Or can I connect you to somebody? Or, you know, can I offer you some strategic advice? Or can we have a brainstorming session? Whatever it is. Like, I think it's, you can start to do that right away. And all that starts a cycle of giving and getting, you know, like just, it's kind of like, for me, I look at it like karma. Like you put it out there in the world and you give something of yourself and what you feel like you can offer, and you'll end up getting stuff back. Not that it's about, not that it's like you even need to, right?
Yeah.
It's just in putting it out there.
And I love that. I love that. Absolutely. And this is something that has become really true for me now as I'm figuring out, okay, what value I can provide to the world. And it's really focusing up on that, like, and just being of service,
yes.
And you'll be able to build something valuable through that. Like, how can you be of service? And always thinking about that and coming from that place of generosity.
Totally. Right? And you're doing it now. Like, you're starting this podcast and you're like putting it out there in the world. And that's like just an example of it, right? Like, I think it's so great. And I think there's so many. And by the way, a lot of women have this like imposter syndrome. Like, I'm not good enough. I'm not ready. I'm not deserving of like a promotion, or I don't want to ask for something, or, you know. And I think that you just have to be willing to be vulnerable and to put yourself out there, and then to know your worth, as I say, like know that you're valuable now, that you can offer something to somebody, and that they'll probably get a lot of value back from it too.
Yeah, I think everyone's here loving your advice, Jen. spot on. I think that's what we want to hear. So thank you so much for taking the time today.
Oh,
I think we all loved hearing your journey. I think a great inspiration to women and also to everybody else who's in the entrepreneurial journey as an innovation leader or an investor, on that you can come from a lot of different backgrounds and enter this space, and actually that perspective that you bring in is really an asset. And when you're grown up as a musician, I'm sure your brain's kind of wired differently and you're able to see things that others are not able to see. And so really understanding the diversity that you bring in, you know, super, super fascinating. And I'm a big believer that you don't get innovation without diversity, without including people that can think differently.
1,000%. Yes.
Yeah. So Thank you for that. Thank you for the great lessons that we learned, sharing your story. And if you want to follow more of Jennifer's work, she mentioned her website, springbankcollective.com. And we'll, I can post more about her details if you want to get in touch.
Yeah, please. Oh my gosh, anytime.
Yeah. Thank you. Okay, bye everyone. Bye.